Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
All right, Scott and I were talking about the break. I'm going to talk a little bit later in the program. I was telling Scott about it, about long-term care. I had a client ask me about it that has an existing policy, and we're looking at some things for them and how we can improve their coverage. And so I have a real-life example that I'm going to talk about. And so Scott and I were doing a quick discussion about the long-term care industry. So you don't want to miss that in the next segment. But before that, Scott is going to give us the inside scoop on one of these terms, stock market insider terms, the VIX. What is it?
You know, my first job was selling long-term care.
Is that right?
Uh-huh.
How'd you do with it?
In this industry, I was horrendous.
Is it just because you didn't see the need or people didn't want it? Or were you just an investment guy at heart?
It's because the method of marketing at that time was make 100 cold calls a day. Ooh. And if you got two appointments and one of them stuck, then you were a star. And it was not any fun and I didn't make any money and I hated it.
Well, I'll go out on a limb here. You're a much better money manager than maybe a long-term care sales guy.
That was in the late 90s, too.
So. All right. Well, maybe you just need a little time to mature. That's all.
I'm sure you... and more from here. The VIX is... Basically, the VIX is a reflection of the expected volatility in the stock market over the next 30 days. That's the simplest breakdown of it. It's calculated by using index options, 30-day index options, and you can track the VIX on the S&P 500 or the NASDAQ or the Dow Jones Industrial. You can also get commodity VIXs, the oil VIX and things like that.
So it's a way to bet on how volatile the market will be over the next 30 days.
Well, actually, I'll adjust that a little bit and say it's a reflection of the bets that are being taken on the market.
So it's a reflection of people putting money on the line for what direction they think the market will move and how much, or just the sheer volatility.
The volatility.
So it doesn't matter what direction, just how much it moves up and down.
That's right. And the reason that the options, the index options in particular, are the basis of it is that, generally speaking, index options are traded by professional money managers,
big money,
hedge funds, folks that presumably know what they're doing. So it's the so-called smart money.
So these are the guys that aren't doing knee-jerk reaction to the latest news in the newspaper or on TV.
Right. And there's some hedging in there. There's some speculation. There's a bunch of different sort of approaches in there. But they basically take the volatility, which is very similar to a standard deviation calculation. It's not exactly. There are a couple different nuances that are different. But basically, they're looking at the volatility or the standard deviation of the prices, both puts and calls, on 30-day out index options.
Okay, so as we see the VIX number go up, should that be a warning sign to everyday investors?
Well, let me give you a little bit of context around that. Generally speaking, if the VIX is above 30, that is considered a very, very high level of volatility. Below 20 is considered a pretty complacent level of volatility. Right now, the VIX is at about 17 on the S&P. To give you a little bit more context, at the end of first quarter of 2012, remember, we had 3 months that were, I mean, basically we were getting a little tick up every day for almost 3 months straight. The VIX at that time was about 14. At the end of October of 2011, after we had gone through a really sharp V shape, the VIX was a little higher than 40. So that's how much it can move around. It's currently at 17, so it's still at very low levels. But for me, and the reason that you and I started talking about this, is that I have noticed the VIX has been creeping up, and at the same time, the yields on 10-year treasuries has been creeping down. So that does tell me that smart money is either harvesting profits, or they're hedging, or they're nervous, one of those.
So there's movement out of the market to some degree into the safer, perceived to be, investments of the 10-year treasuries. That's one of the things going on.
Right.
Okay.
And then the way the VIX comes in place, you have to take it into a view of what's happened over the last, you know, let's say 3 months or so. So really, the markets in this quarter have been really, really, really flat. And that would lead you to believe that put prices in particular are going to be really, really, really flat, because nobody needs put protection, which is downside protection, in an up market. So all of a sudden, if those prices are flat and they make up half of the VIX and then they start getting really volatile, that tells you that there's some money going into put. So in this particular instance, I think the volatility on the VIX is on the put side and not the call side. And sometimes that can,
which is why
opposite.
You've got some of this perception of moving from risk on to risk off.
Yeah,
I think you are having some people who are saying, okay, you know what, good enough for this year. Coming up on an election, you know, we've had some people ask about that, and some people and some professional money managers have said, enough.
Right. Especially if a professional money manager can say to his clients, we're up 12%, 13%, 14% at this point, they want to be able to tell them that at the end of the year as well. They don't want to have to come back and say, well, we're only up 6% now.
But is that the right thing to do for the client?
It depends on the firm. For a lot of hedge funds, it is. For us, we're not hedge funds. You know, we're long-term household investors, which is a completely different approach.
Okay. Well put, Scott. All right, we're, no pun intended on the put. We're going to take a quick break. Here comes a five-second warning sign from Lisa, and we're going to be right back. And Scott might even stick around and listen to my dissertation on long-term care because he is fascinated by the subject. You do come back as well.
If you had a serious health issue, wouldn't you want a second opinion? Is your financial well-being any different? Make sure your retirement plan is the best it can be for your situation. An independent financial advisor can review key elements like stock market exposure, diversification, and fees. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
We're back, and Scott just couldn't help himself. You finished the story. You started to say you used to do some of the long-term care. You did all the bunch of different companies, right?
Yeah, Hancock, Travelers were the two main carriers, and then for clients who weren't quite as healthy, we'd use Bankers Life or something like that.
Okay. Well, as we were talking about on the break, you know, the market for long-term care products, this is still, interestingly enough, it's still a young product, and the insurance companies are still figuring out how to make money or how not to lose money with the products. And one of the things that is important for people to understand is that long-term care policies are like your fire policy on your house. You hope you never need it, and you hope you pay premium the rest of your life and you never have to use it. But the reality is the statistics are out that people over 65 in the United States will have two-thirds of them will need some form of long-term care. Now, how much and for how long is a question, but average length of stay is 3 years, 1.9 or 1.8 for men, 4.1 for women. They're just hardier. They last longer. And we had a guest on the other day that actually said that she felt like women's genes were meant to last longer or last longer, but we had a recent client who was asking us about this, and one of the things I think people need to understand is if you buy a traditional long-term care policy, that's where you pay every year, you pay your premium, you get your coverage. In the state of Florida, and it's similar in other states, there's two particular types of policies that the insurance companies can issue. One is called a guaranteed renewable policy, and as that classification would imply, sounds like you pay your premium good and they can never raise your premium, but they actually can raise your premium. The type of policy where they can't raise your premium is called a non-cancelable or non-can in the industry. So unless you have a non-cancelable long-term care policy, so dig out that policy if you have one and read the fine print or ask your agent, is it a non-can or guaranteed renewable? If it's non-can, great, they can't raise your premium. But if it's guaranteed renewable, they can raise your premium. And we saw recently with a company, a client brought in a policy. They wanted us to tell them what to do. We had not put that policy in place for them, but they had experienced, ready for this, a 72% rate increase. Why? Well, partly because the company probably underpriced the product on the front end to sell it, and number two, the insurance companies are experiencing a much higher claim rate than they expected. So what's happening is the insurance companies are going back to the state and saying, well, you know what? Premium wasn't enough. The claims are higher than we thought, and we got to raise rates. Now,
and the state has to approve that.
If it's reasonable, they have to approve it. Right. I mean, they don't have to, but they're going to.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, what we've seen is some companies are actually getting out of the business. Some of the companies you mentioned you used to do business with, they aren't in the long-term care business anymore.
Yeah.
So I had this recent situation that I thought would be helpful for our listeners that are thinking about long-term care. It's on their mind. Real-life client, they're in their mid-60s, and they are wanting to know, what do we do about long-term care? And so we looked at some different options for them. Now, if they take the traditional approach, which is what we just walked through, which is where you pay your premium every year, you hope to God you never need it, but you pay your premium, the insurance company can raise your premium, but they have to raise it for everybody. So that is a risk. You buy the premium, you buy the policy, and they might raise your premium down the road, and you hope they don't. But if they do, well, then you might be kind of caught between a rock and a hard place. But I ran it for this couple, and the premium to cover both of them, compare this to those numbers you used to run, Scott, just under $4,000 a year to cover both. So about $2,000 a person. Now, that sounds like a lot, and it is. So what is $2,000 a person per, was that $166 a month?
Yeah, I guess it depends on what it gets you.
Yeah, I mean, but it gets you, for them, it gets them about $4,500 of long-term care a month. That's a good amount.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good amount. But the problem is that, again, you're going to be paying every year, and it might be that they have to raise the premium. But that's traditional long-term care. You pay premium, you get benefit, and the policy can be designed to cover you for 3 years, for 5 years, or unlimited period of time in a home health care, assisted living, or a full-blown, what they call a SNF, skilled nursing facility. And you can choose what benefits you want. Obviously, the more benefits you get, it's like cars. You want a Yugo or you want a Cadillac?
Yeah.
Or you want a Buick in the middle?
And I remember people used to always say, I don't want long-term care insurance because I'm not going to the nursing home. But really, it helps you stay out of the nursing home.
Exactly. It's for home health care. It's for assisted living. We've had a couple of guests here recently with Grace Manor was on the other day, and they are an assisted living facility. It's not a skilled facility. So nobody wants to be in a full-blown nursing home, but you might be able to go into assisted care. We met the other day with a representative from Sarah House, which they've got three of them now locally, and they have it's almost like home health care in a facility where they help you, and you can get that assisted care. But the point is that when you look at these policies, you want to weigh your options, because for this couple, the other option they have is to, instead of paying every year and taking the chance they might have to pay a higher premium in the future, they can make a lump sum payment, which we also are looking at with another company. And we're comparing that where they make a lump sum payment and they never have to pay again.
And they can't come back and say, miscalculated.
They can't come back and say, we need more money. Now, of course, where's the catch? The catch is you need to be in the financial position to make a lump sum.
Yeah.
What kind of lump sum are we talking about? We're not talking about $10. We're talking about, for this couple, based on their ages, it's about $50,000 apiece.
Mm.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot.
But you're done. You're one and done, and by the time they're in their 80s, they've got almost $380,000 worth of long-term care for that $100,000 payment. And if they never use it, see, the big hang-up with traditional long-term care is if you never use it, you lose it, you don't get anything from
right.
it. With this other type of policy, which is where you pay this lump sum, if you change your mind and you want your money back, they give your money back, no penalty. Or if you actually die with it, your family gets a death benefit.
Yeah.
So it's got some more flexibility. So it's the classic comparison of either you come up with more money and you've got more choices, or you have to pay as you go each year, and then you get nothing at the end if you don't ever use it. So what I would say to our listeners is that, you know, it really depends on your individual situation, what type of policy makes sense. And for many people, I'll even say something that other people might not say. Some people, they don't need long-term care because they don't have enough money, and they should take their chances. And if they run out of money, then they need to look to the government program of Medicaid to take care of it. So anyway, that's a quick rundown on long-term care. This has come up recently, and I think for a lot of people, baby boomers and people that are already retired, especially when somebody's already made the switch to Medicare, they've gone from, you know, health insurance and the private market over to Medicare. The next thing you need to be looking at, if you haven't already done it, is looked at long-term care insurance. All right, we're going to take a quick break. I know I'm over, Lisa. We'll make it up on the next one, and we'll come back. I've got some other interesting things to share with you. Stay tuned.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
And we're back. I hope you're enjoying the program. A lot of good information. Lisa says my mouth is actually working today. I had a cup of hot tea here a few minutes ago, and I'm wound up. Speaking of being wound up, I'm excited about my talk coming up here shortly. If you haven't noticed this in the paper, we have a presentation, or it's a talk, really, at the Port Orange Library, Auditorium 2, but Port Orange Library, and there's a sign, Thursday, October 11th at 1 o'clock, October 11th at 1 o'clock, Port Orange Library. You can join me, and I have a representative from the Volusia County Sheriff's Department, Sergeant Jay Toth, who is going to join me. And we're going to be talking about how to avoid financial scams. So make sure you come to that program. It will be very good. We're going to take your questions and also give you some good information on how to avoid financial scams, October 11th at 1 o'clock, Port Orange Library. And a couple of other things that I wanted to share with you. Scott's back to work managing our portfolios. I've got a couple things. Some of them are funny, some of them are interesting, and some of them are just some good things for you to know. Funny one, one of my clients got this Powerball Sweepstakes Commission letter telling her that she had won. Thank you, Paulina, for sharing this with us. She dropped it by the office for me to share on the radio. She has won $100,000 in the Powerball Sweepstakes from Texas. Well, she lives locally, and she's not entered or bought a lottery ticket for whatever their Powerball is. And so she got this very official-looking notice, including a check that she can deposit to get ready, to activate something and put it in her account, and then they send her the $100,000. So you call the number, and they give you an authorization, and then, you know, you're supposed to get this money. So if you get something like this, of course, first of all, the odds of winning are extraordinarily low. Your chances are higher of being bitten by a shark while being struck by lightning than to win a Powerball. But if you really think you have, then be ultra careful. Bring it to somebody to look at before you do anything. Bring it to me. Bring it to my office. Let me see the paperwork, and I'll tell you, and we'll do some checking to see if it's real or not, because unfortunately, usually, it's not real. Speaking of things that are not real or that you need to be on the guard for, here's a great thing that I want to bring to your attention. The Securities and Exchange Commission, those are the big boys. Those are the 6'4", 250-pound regulators that go down the road in those blue sedans with just that men in black look. But they're the big boys on the regulatory front, and they have a checklist that I think is fantastic. It's from the Office of Investor Education and Advocacy, and they have an investor bulletin. You can go to their website, sec.gov. That's not Southeastern Conference. That is the Securities and Exchange Commission for all of our football fans out there. It is the sec.gov, and you can go top tips for selecting a financial professional. Say that 10 times fast. Anyway, they have tips. Do your homework, ask questions, find out what products and services are available from the advisor, and understand how you'll pay, which I think, of course, is very important. Ask the professional if they've ever been disciplined, also very important. You can go to the sec.gov website and check them out. And the thing I like most is they gave you a checklist for some questions to ask the advisor. Now, this goes very much in line with the book I wrote and released earlier in the year, How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Scams. That's on my website, davidholland.com. But if you're thinking about working with an advisor, you cannot ask too many questions. Meet with them in person. In fact, let me go over here real quick. Oh, Yahoo. This seems to be all the rage right now. I guess they read my book. Yahoo has something from CNBC, 10 Things You Should Know About Your Financial Advisor. Number one, they're not all pros. So true. I've gone behind folks that made a real mess of somebody's situation. They're not all pros. Somebody might say they're a financial planner, and that doesn't mean they're an expert as being an investment advisor. They may not have somebody on board like we do with Mr. Scott Connor, who's a CFA, Chartered Financial Analyst. So you want to look to experience. You want to look to credentials. Ask those two questions. Go to that SEC website that I mentioned to you. The CFP, you know, we had Don Blandon on the other day. Don Blandon he's the CEO and president of Investor Protection. The website is investorprotection.org, and that is a not-for-profit organization that provides good investor education. And he talked about the importance of the Certified Financial Planner designation. An investment advisor may or may not be a planner, and a planner may not be an investment advisor. You want to know what people are doing. Meet with the prospective advisor in person. 1,000% yes to that. You can figure out so much about people by meeting with them. When I talked to the library earlier in September, I shared with people that, you know, you may not be financial experts, but you've got your gut and your life experiences to judge people. And so make sure you get a good read for the person. Make sure they've got a good, clean track record. Make sure they have your best interest at heart. Ask them if they're a fiduciary. That'll get really to the heart of the matter. A fiduciary has to put your interest ahead of theirs. Somebody that's treating you as a customer just has to make a suitable recommendation according to the regulator. So make sure you're working. If you think that's important, you ask them if they're a fiduciary or not. Check out references if they give those to you, and understand how they get paid. There we are again. What services are offered? Ask them about their investment strategy. And you know what I found is, here's an easy way to know if you've got somebody maybe that's going to be able to help you. If you can't explain what they're telling you they're going to do for you to somebody else, maybe that's not a good fit for you. And then know how often, last but not least, how often they're going to be in touch and in contact with you. Do you expect to hear from them every week? you better find that out up front, or do you plan on meeting quarterly, semi-annually, annually? Do they call you and set these things up, or is this only when you call and want to see them or talk to them that do they get back with you, or you have to leave voicemail every time you call? You get the idea. We're going to take one more quick break, come back, and I'm going to share with you.
Your time is up.
That's it. I'm out of time, Lisa? No more time. Lisa says I'm out of time. All right. I'll share with you next time the ways that rich people think differently than the rest of us. Thanks for being with us.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.